it's one of those aha moments, the experience of seeing this with my own eyes. This was my first encounter, and hopefully the last encounter, because I seen what I was looking for. This thing that was supposed to be a mess all these years, there it is. It's on a tree, and it's looking at me.
This is the Cryptid Creatures Podcast. I am Brian, and right over there is my co-host Todd. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Brian. How you doing tonight, man?
Oh, man. Living the dream. You know that.
We got another Bigfoot encounter coming on tonight.
Yes.
Bringing our friend Val Zavala on to talk about his Bigfoot encounter in Michigan, not too far away from us.
Yeah. Yeah, we recently met Val at the Michigan Bigfoot Conference.
Yes, we did.
That's pretty cool.
Cool guy. He has, I believe, military and law enforcement background. So interesting to see what he's got to say about his encounter tonight.
Yeah, I'm excited.
All right, let's get him on here.
Right on. Let's get him.
You're listening to the Cryptid Creatures Podcast with Todd and Brian. If you've had an encounter and want to be on the show, email us at info@cryptidcreatures.co or visit our website at www.cryptidcreatures.net.
Thanks for talking to us tonight, Val. We appreciate it, man.
You did see me at the conference.
Yes, we did. We met you at the Michigan Bigfoot Conference there in Chelsea.
You guys are both from Michigan, correct?
Indiana. Well, Indiana. Brian's from Michigan. I'm from Indiana.
You're close. You're close. Yeah. So I went back and started looking into a very early incident that occurred in 1965 in Monroe County, Michigan, dubbed the Monroe Monster. The 1965 Bigfoot caper that occurred in Monroe, Michigan, occurred almost exactly a year to the day that the thing happened in the Dewey Lakes, Sister Lakes, in 1964. And this is how the two were tied together. One was on the west side of the state. You would know this from Indiana. You'd be familiar with this. And the other happened in the eastern part of the state in Monroe County. But interestingly enough, these two events happened directly in opposing directions of the state, west and east. They're both borderline counties to Ohio and Indiana. Through my study, through my learning, these Bigfoots, Sasquatches, are migratory. They're constantly moving like nomads. Unfortunately, with Indiana, there aren't a lot of researchers and stuff that I know of, but there's plenty of agricultural country there, which would be good food resources for an animal like that. And I called it an animal. And so I started looking at this. And then I started noticing some things in the news reports that I read about the Monroe Monster that gave me the impression that a lot of the stuff was being shut down and ridiculed. And the witnesses in that case were ridiculed and tortured with the calls of being liars and mocked and ridiculed and stuff. The same kind of stuff that we see in Bigfootery today went on in 1965, which was worse, I think, because there were fewer people, there were no computers and things of that sort to reach out and have a wider readership and stuff. So Anyways, I got in touch with Bob Daigle from Michigan, a well-known, long-time Michigan Bigfoot icon. And I asked him, I says, will you, because I got all this time now, I'm retired, can I go out with you? Can I go hiking with you? And of course, Bob was gracious enough to take me under his wings and impart with me what he's learned in Bigfoot researching. I listened, I watched, and on July 14th or July 19th, 2014, we were out in Waterloo Park, very close to that Chelsea, Michigan Bigfoot conference. And it was probably about 3 o'clock. We've been out there all day. It was very, very hot in July, very humid. I know I was miserable. The bugs and the mosquitoes were tearing us up out there. And I know we went through a couple cans of that off spray because we did go to lunch and we bought some more spray at a potty store, went back out there. And this is what set, this is what set the tables for me. This was my first encounter and hopefully the last encounter, because I seen what I was looking for in life. When you're a curious individual, you're looking for something that you can't find, but when you do find it, it's one of those aha moments. And the experience of seeing this with my own eyes, and not from a grocery store checkout counter in a newspaper, this thing that was supposed to be a myth all these years, there it is. It's on a tree, and it's looking at me. And my first reaction to this was, what the F? I mean, I'm not one to swear and use profanities and stuff a lot. I have, to be honest with you. But I said, what the F? Are you kidding me already? I mean, here this thing is, 8.5, 9 foot tall, hairy, looking at me, blinking its eyes, and in your mind, at least my mind, I'm thinking this has got to be a joke. This has got to be somebody playing a joke. But how are they out here at 3 o'clock midday, very, very hot, dressed like that? If that was a costume, how are they doing this? Why are they doing this? And then I think, as a matter of defensiveness, I called it a freak. I says, you freak, you. And the thing just stood there staring at me, blinking its eyes. And I don't know. I asked Janice Carter this question very early on. I says, because I'm trying to deal with the thoughts and the feelings that I had after this. I says, what is it that I felt, this thing staring at me? And I says, the feeling was that it was staring through me, not at me, but through me. And she says, it was reading you. I says, what do you mean, reading me? She says, it was checking you out to see what kind of person you are, what you had in your heart. But I'm going to tell you something, gentlemen. To me, the experience was a lot like if somebody was standing over my shoulder, rifling through my computer files, reading my files. I didn't ask them to do that. I didn't give anybody permission to do that, but they're doing that. That is the feeling that I got. The feeling that I received was I didn't feel love. I didn't feel joy and happiness. I felt an existential sense of danger, because I felt myself, I was very lucid in my thoughts. I felt myself almost succumbing to a paralysis of some sort. I've never been hypnotized or anything, but I've read enough about it to know that something's going on here. And I didn't ask it. I didn't invite it. But I have no control over it. But what I feel is this thing, the Bigfoot Sasquatch, is a very, very powerful being in a sense that you or I can't control it. In fact, we can't control the thoughts that we receive from this thing. What I understand, what I learned, what I think it is that I felt then is infrasound. And what came to mind when I was under this obvious strangeness was that this is how, to me, it occurred to me, this is how people go missing. Are you listening to me, fellas? This is how people go missing. They fall under this sense of euphorism, this euphoric feeling that everything is okay. You know, hey, I'm ready to go sleep. I'm going to lay down here, go sleep. Well, you know, the tigers and other predators had the same thing. They use the same thing. And you can understand how they can get so close to deer and take a deer down by using the same thing. And so the only thing that I can equate my thoughts, my feelings under the situation was the instance where I was involved, where I was involved in a head-on car collision back in 2003. At that moment, there was the slow motion. Everything was in slow motion. You probably read this before or heard somebody say this before. Believe it. Everything becomes slow motion. It's like you're sitting back watching a movie script, and you're watching these scenes slow in slow motion, but you're very, very lucid in thought. Your mind is a marvel. You've heard this said before. Your mind is a marvelous thing. It really is, because we're not aware of how special we really are as human beings. We have capabilities we don't know we have. And I'm not a mathematician. I sucked at math in college. My wife is the mathematician. She is all about number as a math major. I'm a reader. I'm a history buff. I like talking, obviously, and writing. But math and physics is not my strong suit. Never has been. But I'll tell you what, in the situation, in the experience I had in that car collision, was here I was thinking and calculating in physics the distance, the time, the distance, the space, and how hard the impact was going to be when it happened, because it was going to happen. And it did happen. But I knew I was going to survive because I wanted to survive. I'm not ready to go yet. And when that happened, everything went black. I was in a black space. And here I was, again, lucid in thought, similar to that situation during my encounter. And here I am thinking to myself, I can hear, I can sense, I'm thinking, is this what death is? All blackness. And then I heard the stirring around, and I had broken my back in this car injury. And I was off of work, you know, for a year recuperating from that. And then I had to learn how to walk and all that kind of stuff again. What I'm saying to you is that the encounter was so profound and the experience was so profound that it set me on the journey to do what I'm doing now. What am I doing now? I read, I measure, I compare, I quantify, and sort through reports using 195 different separate individual data points. When I look at a report, I'm looking for keywords. I'm looking for keywords, and I put that in a database. I created four databases that I use. I probably have between 40, 50,000 reports. When you talk to me about a subject about Bigfoot, and if you've seen my stuff on the group site, somebody will bring up a topic. Somebody will bring up a subject like today on that Bigfoot photo archive. Somebody was talking about, well, I don't believe that that's an accurate picture of a Bigfoot because I seen a smile on his face. Are you kidding me? Well, they smile. They have emotions like we do. But I said, not only do they smile, they grimace, they flash teeth, they frown. They have emotion. They show emotion. They're not human like you and me. I don't know what they are. To be honest, I got ideas. There's a lot of data and there's a lot of information that comes up that points to unworldly origins. And what I mean by that is that there's too many reports that bring UFOlogy into the mix. I'm not the person, Brian or Tom, to believe in coincidences. There's no such thing as coincidence. Everything has a purpose. There's a reason for everything. Everything in our life, there's a reason. Nothing is by happenstance. So, again, getting back to what these things are, I don't know what they are, but they're not human beings. There's some place, there's some type of enigma between human and primate. You know, you got people that say, oh, they're forest people. They're people. They're not people. These are animals of some sort. But if they were people, they would be held to the same standards that we are. You go anywhere in your world, in your orbit of everyday life, and you stalk somebody, you follow somebody, you go to their house and peek in their window, or you stand on their porch and yell and scream like a lion, or throw rocks at somebody, and see how long you last out there before you go to jail or something else happens to you. If they were people, they would be paying taxes like me and you, but they're not. If they were people, they would be in jail for similar things. You don't go to somebody's yard and destroy their property or steal their food or destroy their pets. You don't do that if they were people. If you don't hold them to the same standard, they're not people. Plain and simple. So what are they? I don't know. But a lot of them live underground. They do. As well as a lot of other things. And a lot of us don't know about. A lot of us don't want to know about. But there is. There's a world like this down there.
Val, you bring up a good point with that thing about if there were people, you know, they'd go to jail for looking in windows and vandalizing and yelling and whatnot. And that's interesting because if someone called and said, hey, I saw a man in clothes throwing rocks at my house and he ran into the woods. You know, those officers are probably going to go until they find him. They're going to look for this guy and find him. If you say, I saw an 8-foot-tall hairy creature throwing rocks at my house, they may or may not even go into the woods. And if they do, they're not going to find it, most likely, and they're probably not going to spend that much time looking for it.
The guys aren't trained for this stuff. They're really not. And a lot of them, I can't speak for police officers, but I can only speak from the perspective that I know how it was for me. On these different experiences, different calls and stuff. It's a strange thing. It's a phenomenon that at some point, people are going to have to come to grips with and say, hey, yeah, this does exist. And here's another thing that bothers me. And I read this all the time. I'm no expert. I'm not an expert in Bigfootery. I'm just a guy that's taken a time, 9 years or whatever, to research this. And I mean, really research it. I'm talking about, I want to know the nuances and profile these things. How many people out there do this? I don't know. But I know that they're creatures of habit. There's instances where these things are sighted in very heavily populated areas, suburbs, even inner cities. And people can't come to grips with this because the television tells them that this only occurs and this only happens in the Pacific Northwest because somebody from Hollywood in these shows tells them, you know, that is the case, that it's so, but it's not. These things live everywhere. They live on the peripheral of the most populated areas, human beings, which is contrary to a lot of the experts who like to get on these Facebook group sites and tell people they just want to be left alone. Well, I don't think that's entirely true either, because if somebody wanted to be left alone, Todd or Brian, why pray tell would they go try somebody's doorknob? What kind of response do they think that they're going to get? I live in the city. I'm only 6 or 8 miles from Detroit city limits. I'm going to tell you something. You go trying a doorknob around here. That's a no-no. You don't do that. Something's going to happen, and it's not going to be pretty.
Right.
So what, pray tell, do people think in their mind that that is acceptable in today's world that we live in? There's a lot of misnomers out there. There's experts that say this and experts that say that. They just want to be, no, they don't want to just be left alone. If they did, they wouldn't be on your property. They wouldn't be in your backyard.
Val, do you think that over the years, these creatures are becoming more brave, more curious, and moving into more of the territories that you were talking about in our area? Is that possible? Is that why we're hearing more and more sightings popping up?
Well, to put this all into perspective, Todd, you've got to remember, you're from Indiana, correct?
Yes.
You're from Indiana. Mm-hmm. I'm in Michigan. There's 10 million people in Michigan. That's 20 million eyes. We have the technology today that we didn't have in 1965. Everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a computer. And a lot of people have motor vehicles. A lot of traffic. A lot of people. A lot of people are mobile. A lot of people see things. People know now to report things. You combine that and compound that with the fact that I said earlier, that these things are creatures of habit. They're very nomadic. There are, in my mind, in my opinion, there are what we call residents. Those are Bigfoot Sasquatches that have been born and raised in Michigan on some particular land plot, maybe Berrien County, maybe Wayne County, maybe Roscommon County. They're familiar with that area. There are some that aren't. There's some that are just moving through like nomads, going up north, coming back from up north, going to Canada, coming back from Canada, coming out of Wisconsin, going to Indiana, Ohio. There's a constant flux of movement. And when you have traffic like that in and out all the time, you're gonna run into situations where some of these things, Brian and Todd, are very familiar with the territory that they're on, with the terra firma that they stand on, almost to the fact that they have memory of being born here. They're familiar with that area. It's like being home. It doesn't matter that things have changed since they've been there. They're familiar with it. And to me, in my mind, that's how we find some of these things in inner city, in suburbs and stuff like that. Excuse me, because they've been there before. They're familiar with the area. And that segues into something else that I'm going to tell you. Another issue that I have with some of the stuff that you see on the group sites and the internet is, oh, these things are lovely. They're just like kids. We give them some toys, give them some food, give them some apples and oranges. And listen, once you start that gifting, you don't stop it. You cannot stop it. When you stop it, you got holy hell to pay for it, to the point where some people flee their homes and their property over this. How do I know this? Because I see it. Because that's what I research. I've seen it over and over again. But Val, they just love, and this is just peace and happy. These are not toys. These are not pets. These are creatures. These are beings. You've got people fleeing their properties, who are very, very frightened, very fearful of the safety of their children. So they leave their properties, and we drive around, we see this beautiful farm area and stuff. We say, oh, that's a good price. Yeah, you know, we're going to jump into that. Well, you jump into that, you're going to step into a situation that somebody else created, and they didn't want to tell you that because, you know, they want to sell the property and move on and stuff. That is a lot like these private toilets that you have, you know, restaurants, gas stations, rest areas. People go in there and make a stinking mess. Some people leave the mess, leave the pile for somebody else to see and take care of. You see, this is what baiting and stuff is like. You made a mess. When people encourage you to go out there and put food and honey and marbles and this and that and who knows what else, and you stop, you just felt that it's time to stop this stuff. Once you start it, you can't stop it. That's the way it is with these things. And so, therefore, you got them coming around your house, peeping in the windows, trying your doors, because they're hungry. They're hungry, and they're letting you know they're hungry. But you created a problem that should not have been. And if you think for an instant that I'm off base here, consider the bears in the state parks and the national parks. Why do they tell you not to feed the bears?
Right.
Because they come around.
They'll keep coming around,
yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because we interviewed a guy a month or so ago, and he lives up there in Michigan, and he's got a farm ranch kind of thing up there. And he was having some interactions with Bigfoot, we're guessing. Mm-hmm. And it's just a couple weeks ago, his property is for sale now.
Amazing how that works.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. I didn't think anything about it until you just said that.
Yeah. So I know I'm getting into a lot of stuff, gentlemen. Just if you want to guide me to a certain subject topic, have at it. I'm here for the duration.
Well, I just wanted to ask you real quick, back to your encounter. How close do you think you were when you saw the creature, and can you describe its face to us in detail?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't nose to nose with this thing, thank God. I was probably 50 feet.
Close enough to
see the face. And the photos that I took, I only took three three photos. I know I took more, but the only photos that I can show for and speak to are the three photos that came out and that I have possession of, and I haven't posted on my group site. One of them is a photo of the beam showing its entire right half, and that is from the face, neck, right shoulder, chest, belly, right down to his calf, leg calf area. All of that was hairy. The color of, I equate that to the color of, it was a reddish brown color in real life. It was the color of brand new Carhartt coat material, that color brown red. The face itself was almost hairless, and the complexion on this individual was shiny, almost like a plastic sheen to it. And somebody suggested, well, maybe that was sweat and oils, you know, from the skin and stuff that caused it to shine and give it that sheen look. To me, when I called it a freak, it did look plastic. And I can tell you that from my previous experience, having seen corpses, they have that look. They have that dead, pale sheen about them that looks almost plastic. And that's what stuck in my mind when I looked at this thing. And one of the things that I need to say is that all of these things don't look like a gorilla. They don't look like the Patterson-Gimlin Patty, you know, black, hairy, bulky. These things look like what I seen. Some of them look like Chewbacca, the hairy werewolf. And that runs into another topic where people talk about dogmen and stuff. I'm not into that. I don't know anything about dogmen, but I do know that this individual that I seen with my own eyes, it was accompanied by a second. There was multiple creatures there. And I did see the blonde-haired Chewbacca-type being up in the tree higher next to him. Whether it was a male or female, I do not know. But it had red lips, and it seemed almost uninterested in me and what was going on down below, because it was just looking off into another area. And one individual that came on my group site from the UK took my photo, sent it back to me with a bunch of red circles. And what he was doing was he was pointing out black individuals on the ground around me and Bob Daigle at the time. And he was saying that, Val, there was at least four or five other ones on the ground, crouching down, laying down on the ground all around you. And you didn't know. And I didn't. I didn't see that. What I did see, and what I didn't say earlier when I spoke of my encounter experience, was that when we walked into this, area, we had just crossed a agricultural field, and this is Waterloo. There's a lot of swamp in that area, patches of forested areas, little islands, and all that kind of stuff. But this area that we went into, the first thing that we noticed when we walked in there, while we were walking through the thick trees and weeds and stuff, was not only the mosquitoes and the flies, and remember what I just said there, that's important to this whole thing, was that we heard things flickering through the leaves, and we didn't know what it was. I mean, it was a beautiful day, summer day, very, very hot, very humid, and Bob stops me and says, Val, what is that noise? And I said, well, I don't know, it sounds like acorns or something flickering through the leaves, the trees. As we continued moving forward, we heard the first sharp report of wood breaking. When I say sharp report, it's loud in the woods, like a gunshot. This wasn't a twig breaking. This was a pretty considerable thick piece of wood that was breaking. And we stopped and paused and bantered that back and forth while we still heard these things flickering through the trees up above us. We weren't exactly at that spot yet, but we were getting closer. Those should have been telltale signs that something was going on. The bugs, the mosquitoes, the flies biting thick, very thick. I mean, almost unnaturally so. So we proceeded forward, and again, the same thing. It's not raining outside. There's no reason for anything to be falling through the trees like that. And in fact, we weren't even around any oak trees where there could be acorns. But we continued forward. Again, we heard another crack, the second one. Boom. We stopped again, a little more cautious. But this is unusual. We never ran into any of this during the day, earlier today, except in this area. Then we come to an area where we see a great big, I don't know if it's an oak tree or whatever kind of tree it was. It was a huge tree that was on its side, roots up and everything. This is unusual. But again, for somebody that studies and researches this stuff, these are pretty good telltale signs that something's up. And again, I'm pretty new to this stuff at the time, 2014. I'm making mental notes of this. I'm looking up above me. I'm a police officer. I'm a former military veteran. You know, pretty streetwise. Did well in the streets. But I don't want to be surprised by anything, but I'm not expecting to see a Bigfoot or Sasquatch. You know, it's just not happening. But then we see a great big bramble bush that looked like a tunnel inside of it. Huge. And it had to have been 6, 7, or 8 feet long. It was very long. And there was a tunnel inside this Bigfoot nest. I'm certain that's what it was. And Bob shimmied over the other side of this fallen tree, and I stayed where I was at on the opposite side, just looking around, looking behind me. I don't want anything coming up behind me. And he's on his hands and knees, and he's looking inside trying to see the end of that nest to see if there was anything in there. And it was dark. Neither one of us carried a flashlight. While he's looking that over, I'm looking around, and I see this thing on the tree, and I'm stunned. I am stunned. I got a camera with me. But what I do, I'm talking to Bob, he's talking to me, over his shoulder, and what I do, gentlemen, is take that camera without giving without telegraphing my intentions. I turn around and just start snapping pictures in a 180 degree circle. That's how I captured it. That's how I snapped the photo of it. And after I went through this staring contest with this thing, it seemed like to me like it took a lot of time. It seemed like I lost some time there. That's what it felt like to me, because it was already starting to get dark when this all ended and stuff. And what I seen there in that area, not only was the fallen tree there and the large Bigfoot nest, there was also a large three-stick teepee, pulled teepee, right in that area too. When you look at the photo, go to my group site, you'll see it. Right there above, there's a little stick, pointer stick that's in that photo right above the timestamp. You'll see the teepee there, right there for everybody to see. And to my left, to my exact left is where the individual is on the tree. So we go through this emotional thing, back and forth, staring at each other. And I'm telling Bob, we got to leave. What do you mean, Val? I didn't hear you. I said, we got to leave now. I just get the feeling that we have to leave. I'm a chess player. I mentioned before, I'm not a card player. I suck at playing cards. Don't ever have me as a Euchre team player. So we ain't going to do it. But as a chess player, I know, and as a student of Zhenju, the art of war, I know you don't humiliate your enemy. You humiliate your enemy, and that's the most dangerous enemy you can have. You can know when you sit down and compete against another person or thing, you know when you've defeated them. You don't need to rub their nose in it and all that kind of stuff because they're a dangerous adversary at that point. This is what I'm telling Bob. I says, we got to go. Let me say this. When we're thinking about this stuff and this infrasound, that experience and stuff, the only thing that I felt that released me from that grip was the thought of free will. When we're born, God gives us free will. We have the free will to think for ourselves. And when I started thinking of that, that's when I felt that influence dissipate over me, and I was ready to go. And now it seems like it's ready to, it's very dusk outside. Where did all this time go? I don't know. Where it went. It seemed like we were there forever. So that's when we left. Huh. And I told Bob wanted to get into some conversation about why we leave it now. And all I wanted Bob to do was, Bob, I says, you got to leave now. If you don't leave, I says, I'm going to leave. I don't want to leave you here by yourself, but we have to leave. Just trust me. We get out of that forest. We get up to the edge of that agricultural field. And right there, gentlemen, is an impression, a footprint. I got a photo of that also on my group site. 17.5 inch. You take that footprint and you multiply that times 6.5, and that'll bring you your answer.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.
Whatever your answer is, when you multiply those that formula, you divide it by 12 inches to a foot, it'll tell you what size that thing was. And that was 9 feet. So that's been my experience with this. It took me a year to go back out there again. I didn't want to go back. I did not want to go back out there. I did go out there a year later. What I found when I went out there was somebody went out there and sanitized the entire place. The tree, the big tree, the large tree I told you that had fallen, it was gone. The teepee that was there, gone. The Bigfoot nest that was there, gone. The only thing that you've seen at that location was little chips of wood from like chainsaws and stuff. What do I conclude over this? When you go into state parks and national parks, the officials They have cameras all over the place. Think about that when you go out there and, oh, it's time to pee out there. I got to go pee and stuff, you know. Think about that. Why do I say that? It's because of the 1,960 Bigfoot reports that I have in Michigan alone, which is the largest Bigfoot database in Michigan right now. There's at least a half dozen or more reports of citizens, just good citizens that happen to be listening to police scanners. Before Michigan went digital, we all had, all law enforcement across Michigan had analog radios, which meant that some people sat at home and listened to their scanner. That's what they did. They enjoyed doing that. That's when they picked up radio conversations between DNR and sheriffs, talking just like you and I are talking, because they didn't think anybody else was listening. But unfortunately, you know, somebody was writing it down. A lot of good reports, a lot of good reports confirming what we think we already know, that, yeah, there's somebody else out there watching, and they see and confirm this for, you know, for the good of everybody. Anybody that says somebody knows more than they're saying, yeah, I believe that, because, you know, there's a lot of sting operations that go on every day in state parks and national parks. You know, they're looking for people that poach, and people do that, and therefore they have the cameras and stuff. They got now they've got the drones and stuff that they use, all the stuff that you can imagine that they use and apply for law enforcement every day on the streets. They do it out in the woods. And you cannot convince me that they don't see stuff out there, because they do, because I got reports that say they do.
For the listeners, what is the name of your Facebook group page?
It is Michigan Bigfoot Reporting Data, Gumshoe Guys Corner.
And I've seen the pictures on there, and I think I showed Brian too. We've both looked at them. Those have to be the best non-blob squatch pictures that I've seen.
Some of the best I've seen.
You were really thinking when you pulled your camera out and took those pictures in that 180 degree. And they are really good quality. I mean, you can see there's something, what it is, you know, who knows, Bigfoot, obviously. But, they're really good pictures.
Well, you know, I used a cheap Kodak digital camera because, after all, I mean, there was no such thing as Bigfoot. And why would I go out and spend $300 for a camera that,
right,
I can just throw away if I drop it, lose it, no big deal. But after I took the pictures and stuff, you know, that quality of digital photography is not what I would like, but it's what I had. It's the only thing I had. I didn't use a cell phone camera. But some people say, well, you know, maybe you'll see another one. I really don't want to see another one. I took one bite of that apple. I don't need to take another one. But there's a lot of people that say, well, I really wish I could see one. Well, you know, if you do, have somebody with you. That's the only thing I can say. That's the only recommendation I would give you. If you see one, make sure you have somebody with you. And be ready to steel yourself for the mockery and the ridicule, because you're not going to keep it to yourself. Chances are you're going to tell somebody, and you're going to get a little dose of that ridicule and mockery that goes with it.
We really appreciate your stories and coming on tonight. Those are amazing encounters and stories, and all the stuff that you do up there in Michigan, and all the information you've collected. And you're just a big part of this, you know, Bigfoot world that we're in here, and being the influencer and researcher that you are. So we really appreciate you being here and talking with us tonight.
Yeah, we do.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks, Val.
Have a good night.
You too, Val.
You too.
See you, bud.
Bye.
That guy's got a lot of Bigfoot reportings, Bigfoot statistics. He's really collecting a lot of information up there in Michigan.
Yeah, I can't wait to read some of that, if anything, he puts it out.
Have you noticed we've getting more and more Michigan encounters lately, it seems?
Yes. Dogman, and Bigfoot.
Popping up more and more. The more people that we talk to, the more people we run into, the more people that we're conversing with. I saw one in Michigan. Yeah, it was up in Michigan. So
yeah, we hear that a lot. We hear, man, big Michigan's full of that. Right. So yeah, we're finding that out.
So if you live in Michigan, if you've had an encounter, get a hold of us. Reach out to us.
Absolutely.
Check out our website, www.crypticcreatures.net.
Right on. It's like a one-stop shopping for everything cryptic creatures.
You can email us there. You can check out our store. You can get extra content and see what it's all about. So once again, guys, we appreciate you listening and being here
always
with us tonight. Brian, my friend, I appreciate you as well.
Oh, man, always fun.
Until next time.
Right on. See ya.